Good morning. My name is Grace Hatchett, and I am a very grateful alcoholic. And I am grateful for my sobriety to God, to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, to all of my sponsors, and all of my pigeons. They told me this was a tennis club, so I came prepared. Notice the name, all right? On July the 2nd, 1991, my then sponsor, Albam Carruthers, passed away. As many of you knew her, she spoke around all over the country. I came down to Palm Springs and loved Palm Springs. And unfortunately, we had planned a wonderful trip to come down, and Alabama was going to stay with Bill and Steve. And she never did quite make that trip. But I have a new sponsor, and my new sponsor, who's 29 years sober, her name is Blanche Wilson. So the initials are still B. Wilson. I have never spoken in Palm Springs. I've joined you for your Sunday night meetings, and I was a little nervous. And my higher power, who has a wonderful sense of humor, put in my meditational readings that I do each morning when I get up. One of the meditations was about, you know, you can't run from yourself. If you do it geographic and you haven't solved the problems there, you're going to take them with you. And the bottom line at the end of that meditation was this sentence: you can be dysfunctional anywhere. For those of you who don't know what this word dysfunctional is, that's a four-syllable word for fucked up, you know. So I figured if I was going to fuck up in Palm Springs, I would fuck up in Palm Springs. And if I stayed home in Woodland Hills, I would still fuck up there. So, you know, since you invited me, I just, you know, came and whatever comes out, comes out. I was born 52 years ago. Next Friday, June the 19th, is my natal birthday. In Montgomery, Alabama. And during the years when I was a child in Montgomery, Alabama, the mayor of the city's name was Tacky Gale. So my inner child is not ruled by guilt or shame, but by Tacky. That's something for a gay lady to run around with, you know. My father looked like Rhett Butler. My mother looked like Ava Gardner. And I turned out to look more like Rhett Butler, but frankly, I don't give a damn. My father was the alcoholic in the family, and he was a bartender at a honky-tonk at a place where Hank Williams used to come. When they threw him out of Nashville, Tennessee, and he would play there until he could get halfway sober, and then he would go back to Nashville to the Grand Ole Opry. And I had my first drink in that bar when I was 5 years old. It was a drink of something called Red Cap Ale that had a picture of a man on a horse with a red cap jumping the fence. As a child, I liked sodas, and you know, I was used to something that came in a bottle tasting sweet. And most beers are on the more bitter side, and so I took about a half a swig and made a funny face and spit it out and said, "Papa, what's that made out of?" And he said, "Horse piss." So I didn't have too much more to drink for a little while after that. And then when I was... About 17 years old, I went away to an all-women's college called Montevallo. It happened to be the same college that Alabama Carruthers attended, strangely enough. We never planned that. We just met in California many years later. And those are the coincidences that happen in Alcoholics Anonymous to you. You know, you don't put 1,500 women in the middle of nowhere without expecting some of them to come out to be lesbians, you know. They just will entertain themselves. Montevallo happened to be the place where I took tennis lessons, and my tennis professor was a very interesting woman whose family, she was a lesbian, and she wanted to major in physical education. And her parents thought that, you know, a college degree in physical education was a college degree in play, and they didn't like that. So she had the determination to get a PhD in mathematics to prove to her parents that she could get a real degree, turned around and got a degree in women's physical education and was a Wimbledon champion. And as she used to say, my name is Dr. Bernice Finger, and it's the middle finger, girls. Montevallo was where I started drinking. Montevallo was in a dry county in Alabama, and so my first serious drinking was White Lightning, because that's what you can get in a dry county, is moonshine whiskey from the bootlegger. So I am not one of those alcoholics that, used alcohol because it was a legal drug. In Alabama, in a dry county, it was an illegal drug. You've seen signs if you've been in Los Angeles. I don't know if they had them out here in Palm Springs or not, but all over Los Angeles, they've had billboards. June the 11th. June the 11th. And then a few weeks later, they had a picture of a dinosaur up there. Well, June the 11th, which was Friday, I just celebrated 14 years of sobriety. It was my birthday. And, you know, I figured that picture of that dinosaur was me. Because I feel that way in Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes. All I ever used was alcohol. I apologize, you know, but I found my love early in life, and, you know, I'd rather fight than switch. And I just kept drinking. Anyways, all of you have got some wonderful stories about snorting coke and doing this and doing that and all this other stuff. And, you know, I'm not willing to go out and use something else to get another story. You just stuck with what I got. I made straight A's at Montevallo, even though I was drinking. But I got bored with it real quick, and so I left Montevallo. One of my college roommates was known as Frenchie, and she had that nickname because her mother ran a whorehouse down in New Orleans. And I decided to go do some graduate work with Frenchie's mother. That's where I learned about a drink called a hurricane. A hurricane you call zombies out here. But in New Orleans, they serve it in a hurricane chimney, a hurricane lamp chimney. And it's just layers of rum, and it's just a wonderful drink. After I did my graduate work down in New Orleans, I went back home to my hometown, and I actually interned in the hospital that I was born in, St. Margaret's Hospital. And I ran into some things when I was interning that, I drink and I am an alcoholic, I believe. simply because I am bodily and mentally different from people. And when I take one drink of alcohol, I just want to drink the whole sea, and that's it. When I was driving down here, there's a sign on a Miller Brewers on the way down here. And it says, if you drink, think. That's for normal people, because I didn't want to think when I drank, you know. I drank not to think. If I had to think when I was drinking, forget it. I never wanted to control and enjoy my drinking. You can't enjoy your drinking if you're controlling it. Go away with it. You know? Anyways, but I do think that there are some things. I was saying I'm an alcoholic because I'm an alcoholic, and I'm bodily and mentally different. But, you know, there are things when you're young that sort of upset you. And what I had to do in my year of internship was, like, do autopsies. And one of the things that definitely I went home and drank a lot over was they brought in this little two-year-old child that had been run over by one of these steamrollers, you know. Then there was a wonderful male nurse friend of mine who was in training named Burton Laws, and they called me down to go to the morgue, and I walked in, and there was Burton, because this was in the Bible Belt, in the heart of Dixie, and they don't like queers down there, and somebody had told his mother, and she had rejected him, and he took some cyanide. As a result of that. And those are some of the reasons that, you know, I really drank a lot that year, and it's another reason why I left the Deep South and came to the state of California. And I've been here for about, I came in 1963. And I drank for 22 years. My drinking took me through 5 jails and prisons and 3 mental institutions. My drinking worked for a long time, and a lot of parties had a lot of fun. I am grateful for every drink I ever drank. I'm grateful that I am an alcoholic, because the bizarre behavior that I displayed when I was drinking, if I wasn't an alcoholic, they would call me a lot of other tacky names, you know. And, you know, I finally found a reason for which was alcoholism. And I had been, by the time I finished my drinking, I had been asked to leave Skid Row bars and Skid Row parties. I had tried Freudian therapy. I had tried, transactional therapy. I had tried Rolfian therapy and Adler. I had tried Primal Scream, You Scream, and Ice Cream. I had looked for spiritual answers. In the town of Los Angeles, you can find every form of spiritual program that you want. And I went to churches and temples and synagogues, and I have been dipped and sprinkled in most of them. Only to go home and dip and sprinkle myself with scotch one more time. Now, I liked any kind of liquid that was brown, let me tell you. If it was bourbon or scotch or Southern Comfort or rum, I loved it right now. I have to admit to you that I even drank vodka. And that just, you know, it just doesn't have any, and it's just clear. No taste, nothing, you know. See, I kept this bottle of vodka in my house like I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, the denials that we say to ourselves, these denials. Well, I kept this bottle of vodka in my house, and I would drink the vanilla flavor up before I'd touch the vodka, and that proved I wasn't an alcoholic, because I wouldn't drink anything. You know. Finally, I did drink the vodka. And on the morning of June the 11th, 1979, I had found an Al-Anon to take care of me. And that Al-Anon had finally gotten disgusted with me. And told me I had to do something about my drinking, or that was it. So I called about the central office. of the San Fernando Valley. They told me if I would show up at 8 o'clock that night at a little psychiatric hospital across from Valley Presbyterian Hospital, they're being there at 8 o'clock, not to drink between then and then. Nobody came out to hold my hand, to take me to a meeting, to throw at me. I don't know why, just was the person was on the phone that day. I guess that was it, but I was willing because I was desperate. And in order not to drink from 8 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock that night, I had a friend who was a pot dealer. And her father had died from alcoholism, so she hated alcohol, and she'd been trying to get me to switch. And I knew that this person just didn't have a single drop of alcohol in the house because they hated it. And I was safe if I went over to her house. I went over to Jamie's house and I shook out for that length of time. And I appeared at the meeting at that little psychiatric hospital. There were 9 straight men, and there was a queen, Ralph Pease, was leading the meeting. And I took one look at Ralph, and I knew that gay people were welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous. Those 10 men were very wonderful, very loving, and very kind to me that night. And they told me, they apologized in great profusion, that there wasn't a woman there to work with me. And they promised me if I wouldn't drink and I would come back next week, that they would find me a woman. I loved Alcoholics Anonymous immediately. I had been a lesbian for about 30 years by that time, and I never had 9 straight men and a queen promise to find me a woman. This was the most hospitable place I had ever been. So, I did go back the next week, and they had a lady there by the name of Patience. Apropos for me, you know. She didn't become my sponsor, but she was very nice. And she had a directory of the meetings, and she told me about this Wednesday night meeting at Kittredge, called the Round Robin meeting at Kittredge. And it had a G by it. At that time, it was the only meeting in the San Fernando Valley that had a G by it. And so, naturally, I immediately took myself there. Now, if you have never been to the Maude Booth Center on Kittredge in North Hollywood, you don't know that there's a chain-link fence around the entire complex. And there was a gate that had a little lever like this. You know, you've seen those levers where you just lift up and you pull it this way or lift up and pull it that way. I was so, you know, weirded out and brain dead that I didn't figure out, because there was a chain sort of looped over and I thought that chain was around it. And I didn't know all I had to do was lift up this lever, right? So I walked around that entire chain link fence looking for another open entrance. By the time I got back there, somebody had you know, was walking in, and they pulled it up for me, and I went in. And that became my home group. And you hear a lot about people who go out in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to say this. The tradition is that we observe anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, and TV. Because I'm just going to name off a few of those people who got me sober, kept me sober, and who are still sober today. Percy is one of them who's here today and who is the one that contacted me about speaking down here. You know, and when Percy called me, I thought, you know, nowhere else in the world have I met friends that wanted to hear me talk 14 years later. Tom O'Mara is another one. And I'll tell you a little story about him and procrastination a little bit later on. Dave Haldeman, George Takeaway, Fred Dole, who's out here in Palm Springs. And you see, usually your home group doesn't ask you to speak at a convention, but that wasn't my home group. And there's more of my home group living here in Palm Springs than anywhere else in the country right now, you know. So Palm Springs is sort of like my home group because they all moved out here. Lois Taylor Campbell is in Maine. Sybil is in Oklahoma. And Jerry E., Mary Real. All these people still sober. They're still sober. And Robert and Richard F., they're still sober. Armando's out here. There's just so many more. They're still sober, you know. I like to tell that because you just hear about all the, you know, I started out with this group of people and I'm the only one left. Well, I'm not the only one left, thank God. It's a program that does work. And when I was 6 months sober, I got my first commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was elected secretary of that meeting, and that meeting has since no longer exists. But from that meeting, we started a Sunday night meeting at the Moore Park Church in Studio City, and that meeting is still going, and I'm going to take cake there tonight. And that's, you know, every Sunday night when I go to that meeting, I think, you know, isn't that wonderful that you could do something in your very first year of sobriety as fucked up as I was and it's still going on? It's, you know, survived in spite of me. Now, Tom's going to have to help me because I don't remember if it was my first or my second year. And he can tell me. But I was, as I said, sort of brain dead when I got here. Because when I was about 6 months sober, this 90-day wonder came to the Wednesday night meeting with Tom named Rusty, who became a real good friend of mine. And in those years, they used to have the gay convention out here along with the straight convention that's going to be next week. And we used to have it on one side of town and let them, you know, be boring on the other. And it was either my first or second year that Rusty asked me and my lover to come out to Palm Springs and join them for that, and we did. And Rusty, Tom, and my birthday is the 9th? 11th. Both same? All right. I knew it was close. Rusty got us cakes, both of us cakes, right? But mine, he turned upside down. He dropped. Now, this is how to treat your sponsor. I got Tom's cake, and he got the one that was upside down. I remember when Tom was about 9 years sober, he was leading that Wednesday night teachers meeting, and the topic was procrastination. And, you know, that's sloth in five syllables. And he explained to us the reason why he wanted some help, and he had picked that topic, was that he needed to clean out his garage. And so we all talked on procrastination. And when Tom was 17 years sober, he moved out of the belly, and he called to tell me he had cleaned out his garage. One of the first healing, joyous laughs that I had when I was sober, I was about 6 months sober. And During those days, it took about two pots of coffee to wake this drunk up, and I still sort of gradually come to in the morning, and may need a couple more pots of coffee. I was living with an Al-Anon lover, and we had an agreement, and I got to get up an hour early to prepare, because all Al-Anons get up singing, "Oh, what a beautiful morning!" Remember when you were hungover? And that particular morning, I was sitting at a dining room table, and right opposite where I was sitting was a window that looked out on our backyard, and right at the end of the backyard was a fence. The Al-Anon had a slip that morning and got up early, and all of a sudden I began to hear the shrieks and the carryings on and the... And I raised my eyes to the window and I looked out, and there was a hole in the back fence where a drunk had driven a car through the night before. I recognized it immediately as the work of one of us. And I began my first real laugh in sobriety. It came from the toes and went through the calves and up through the thighs and shook my whole body. I fell off the chair, I fell on the floor, and I peed in my pants. The Al-Anon looks down. And, you know, the Al-Anon is looking like, oh, this is another moment of alcoholic insanity I've got to put up with. The reason I was laughing was because I knew to the core of my being that I had not done it. That's still one of the great gifts of sobriety that I'm grateful for today. I'm grateful for today. You know, whatever I did last night, you know, I may do some bad things in sobriety. It's progress, not perfection. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous broke away from the Oxford group because we don't believe in absolutes. It's progress, not perfection. But at least whatever I did last night, I remember today, you know. And I have found a great deal of joy in Alcoholics Anonymous in my commitments. I have been secretary and treasurer of meetings. I've been coffee person. I've been literature person. I've been an intergroup, and I've been a GSR. And one of my favorite commitments, when I was 7 years sober, I had a coffee commitment Monday noon Radford for a whole year. And, you know, I got real possessive about that coffee commitment. I just didn't want to give it up, you know. It's my coffee pot. I still am a grapevine sales lady, and wherever I go, whenever I talk, I'm going to pitch the Grapevine. It's a monthly magazine of Alcoholics Anonymous. It comes to you every month in a plain brown, plain white envelope, just like your porno. And costs you $12 a year. It has stories in the back of the, just like in the back of the big book, except that they're more up-to-date, modern stories, and they use terminology that you can understand. I know most of you do come in these days poly-addicted, and they do talk about other drugs besides alcohol in their stories. They don't talk about John Barleycorn. They don't talk about the water wagon. I'm a, you know, one of those persons that gets off on etymology, and I have looked and I have searched in libraries, and I tell you, I still can't find the origin of what the water wagon is. So it has all these stories. It has a whole section on the different conventions around the United States, and it has jokes in here. And one of my favorite jokes out of the grapevine is that my grandmother's 80 years old and she still doesn't need glasses. She drinks right out of the bottle. Any of you who don't subscribe, I come prepared. And I'll talk about my three favorite books. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't have one, steal one. You'll pay us back when you work the steps. This is what it looks like when you study it. When you find a character defect, you throw it across the room. Because you know that's just that much more work you got to do. You know what it looks like when it's new. And if you use it, it begins to look like that. And it has magic. Let me tell you, I was secretary of the Saturday Night Colfax Mirror in the Valley. One Saturday night, I drove up to the neighborhood of Colfax at 6 o'clock because we have to get there early, right? All around the entire neighborhood for three blocks was this yellow tape. It was cordoned off. There had been a chemical spill, right? And then the man told me they didn't know how long it was going to take to clean that up. There's no way in the world, you know, that we could just go around that entire section and put up signs and say, you know, the meeting's canceled because of chemical spill. Well, I had my big book. I went over to 4 and 20 and a coffee shop, and I sat down and I read something in the big book. I finished a cup of coffee, and I got back in my car, drove back over there. There was no yellow tape. There's no yellow tape. It's gone. You know, we had a meeting when I was playing. This is 12 and 12, the 12 steps of personal recovery, the 12 traditions of unity, and the 12 concepts of world service. It's a book that not a lot of people carry around. If you become a general service representative, you become more familiar with the GSR service manual. And those are the three sides of an equilateral triangle. Recovery, unity, and service. They are all equal in importance. That's why no side is longer than the other. If you aren't sober, you probably won't have a lot of unity. I didn't have a lot of unity when I was drinking. At the end of my drinking, I'd call people up to try to be social, and they'd say, oh, you. You're not a heck of a lot of service when you're out there driving 100 miles an hour down the freeway the wrong way in the wrong lane. Some of the wreckage of my past was that I had quite a large number of automobile accidents when I was out there doing drunk driving. And one time I went through a windshield. I had 50 stitches in my head. I broke my leg in a number of places, and I lost all my teeth. And I carry my old set around with me. And when I think about drinking, I have a conversation with myself. You want to talk about what it was like? So many of you today come here young and you still have your teeth, you know. And that's wonderful. It's marvelous. And
how much longer?
What time is it? I'll talk just a little bit about the last couple of years of my sobriety. It's what I've been going through recently. When I was, 8 years sober, I made a decision to go back to school one more time. When I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had already collected a large number of degrees, because I was good at going to school. And I mention that because I want you to know that self-knowledge will avail you nothing. Those degrees enable me to be confused in quite a different number of academic areas. In my early sobriety, I taught school. I taught a course in medical physiology, biochemistry at Northridge University. It was one of the most thrilling jobs I've ever had. And that job still pays me today because my students still send me cards and letters and let me know what's happening in their life. So not every job you will have in life will necessarily pay you a very large salary. But sometimes the fringe benefits are more important than a large salary. And every time I get a card from one of them telling me they've got a promotion, and I think they remember their teacher all these years after that. That's just a blessing. Just a blessing of my sobriety. But when I was 8 years sober, I decided to go back one more time, since I'm compulsive, I hadn't had enough school yet, and go to law school. And, I was 40-something years old, and I thought, well, maybe I'm too old. But the thing is that if I didn't go to school, I would still be 4 years older after I hadn't gone to school, you know. So I decided to go to school. My mother was living in Northern California. She had a nice little home up there. But she decided we would sell that. She would move to Los Angeles. She would move in with me. And she would help me while I went to law school. She'd keep house and do the cooking and all that stuff. Well, 3 months after I started law school and mother moved in, I came home one day and mother's leg had turned blue. It was ice cold. And that began a series of 3 years of medical problems, which ultimately there were 10 major operations that mother went through. They did a number of different slicing down her legs and arterial bypasses. They had to amputate her leg. She had all kind of cardiac arrest. She had bone marrow suppression. And, so that was what I did while I went to law school. I worked full time. I went to law school and I nursed a very sick lady. And on April the 19th in 1991, my mother passed away. By the end of the 3 years of traumatic operations and seeing the pain that she had gone through, God had given me the willingness to know that she was going to be a great deal more comfortable on the other side. Had I wanted to ask God to keep her here, it would have been for my very own, very selfish reasons. And I had very loving parents. I was able, because of the support of sponsors in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and loving God, to show my mother 12 years of sobriety before she passed away. And of all the things I ever accomplished in my life, that was what she was the most proudest of. Mother went on a lot of 12-step calls with me, and she did a lot of 12-step work herself when she was living up in Northern California. There's a number of different women she became friends with, and their husbands were alcoholics, and she would say, my daughter belongs to this great group, and they get people sober. My mother was a practical nurse, and somebody came over to her her home one day to get her because somebody in the senior citizens park was sick, and they knew she was a nurse. And she walked in to this lady who had the flu, and the woman looked up at her and says, "If you're one of those come to Jesus and eat flats, you can leave me alone." Turned out to be a lady by the name of Nadine Klein, second woman alcoholic ever sober in San Francisco. You know, those are little miracles that just happen in your life once you get in this program. My mother understood my sexual orientation, and I really knew that she had caught on when one day we were walking down the street back in the days in which see-through blouses were popular, and she said, "Have you ever noticed those who shouldn't wear them do?" She's doing a little cruising for me. And last May, I graduated from law school. I have not taken the California bar yet. After those four very traumatic and trying years, I came to a decision. I wanted a rest, and I have taken a year off, and I will be taking the California bar in February, and we'll see if I pass or not. You know, when I originally got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of my great fears was that I was going to be an old dyke at the end of the bar. You know, the one that everybody sort of buys drinks for every once in a while. Just, "Hi, sweetie," you know. And if I study real hard and I pass that examination, one of the things I'm now looking forward to is I will be an old Ike at the end of the bar. It has been wonderful and rewarding 14 years. I have shared with you that I have gone through some bad things, but I had the support and the love of friends and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and a loving God who gave me, you know, somewhat a weird sense of humor. But all of that enabled me to walk through it. And if you would have told me 14 years ago that I could walk through that I would have the intestinal fortitude to do that without a drop of alcohol, I would have said, "You're out of your fucking mind." You know, no way could this, you know, scared, fearful little alcoholic have done anything without a drink of alcohol on a daily basis. And I have done it. It has been wonderful. It has been marvelous. And Alabama Carruthers always told me the best was yet to be. And so far, that is the case with every year of my sobriety. It has been a rough road, but a beautiful journey. And the man who taught me to sing was Hank Williams, and one of his songs best describes my feeling. "Today I passed you on the street, and my heart fell at your feet. Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm still in love with you." Thank you.